my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please give a warm, rousing welcome to Thomas Cresta.
You guys have a pretty cool group. I know a few of you, I want to thank Bill for asking me to come up, but I'm thrilled too. In fact, Bill came up to me before the meeting. He's like, then after seeing him, he's like, you know, you're kind of nervous. And I'm like, no, I don't get nervous when I speak. And he's like, what are you doing in the introduction? And by the way, this is a one-person lesson. He's not going to be here with me, you know? To be sober. I used to, around the corner here, we got the drunk only group right here. It's a little house right here. My buddy Teddy's house is right there. And I know some of you people, I've seen your faces before. I've been an alcoholic. In fact, I've been around you guys for so long. I'm telling my girlfriend, when you pull up, you ever notice when you see a bunch of us, you're like, oh, there's a meeting over there. You can have a whole bunch of business people or construction guys or anywhere you can see us. We like stick out like a sore thumb. While smoking, but somehow by the way we move. You know what I mean? And I always thought that even from a really young age, like, I kind of always had this feeling in the back of my mind it was something big and that I was going to be unique. I did not know I was going to be an alcoholic. It's going to make me unique. You know, in fact, the first time, and I'm going to use some language that if you don't know what Chip's TV show is, you don't know who Poncherello is, you might not know what some of my terms are. Anybody know who Poncherello was? And I know my age bracket. All right, cool. We used to say, when I was young, that before I needed to do anything, I needed to get a head change. You know, is that possible? Anybody head change? And the first head change I ever got was my cousin Phil. I was called him 10. And him and my aunt and uncle, my uncle Philip, they lived up in Mariposa. They were rich, so they had a house. You know, me and my grandma lived in a mobile home trailer. They were rich. And my uncle had smoked Winston's, and we used to steal Winston's from him for my cousin Philip. I didn't smoke, but I smoked for him. My grandma used to smoke those Moors, you know, those little bad boys. In the 80s, we used to put those things for those little bad boys. I stole those from him, too. And we went to the fair one time in Mariposa. If you've ever been there, it's not like the Fresno fair where you get shanked, you know, standing in line for the zipper. It's a real nice fair, right? And that's nice. You don't have to carry a weapon, you know, to enjoy the cotton candy. But we were up there, and we couldn't get to our parents' cigarettes. And before the midway, they always have that lady that builds stuff out of glass. She had the porch, you know, she'd be making the unicorns and ashtrays. And, you know, I hope that's not a trigger for anybody. Teaching about triggers over there, but. She had built these little tubes that had a smoke inside of them, and it said in case of emergency, break glass. And they were like, sensitive as crap, four of us. We bought 10 of them. You know, because they were rich, and my uncle, we'd give him cash. We swiped, you know, we got a bunch of those, and we went behind the midway in any fair. There's always the trucks and the places where they store stuff. And we crawled underneath this big semi-truck trailer. There's real tall grass, beautiful shiny day, and he broke them. And he said, do you want to try one? And I said, yeah. You know, yeah, I do. I was like 10. And I took a drag off of that thing. And I don't know if you remember. I don't remember my first ice cream cone. I remember my first head change. It was like magic washing over me. I don't know if anybody identified with that, like magic. So we went back home. I lived on the west side of Fresno. And I took all my pennies and nickels, rolled them up. Went down to the corner of the liquor store, Save-On Liquors. It's still there, a different name now. And I stood outside and waited for, an outstanding member of our community to come walking by. He bought me a pack of Marlboro Reds. I went back to my place and put them on the bed. And this is an interesting thing. First head change I got, and I was immediately hiding it. I think there was smoke under the bed. And it got late. My grandmother, she could sleep in the nuclear holocaust. In fact, later on in my teen years, that was like the best thing ever. I didn't have to push the car halfway down the street to do it. I could just start it up right in the foot and the driveway, move off. But I took a pencil and I poked it through the screen in the window, just big enough, and I lit up that cigarette and I smoked it back there, and I kept peeking to see her, and I throw it out, put it out, throw it out the window, and I lit up another one, you know, 10 years old. I smoked 20 cigarettes that night. Gave me a headache, so I made me sick. It didn't even give me the head change anymore. And I just had a cigarette with my girlfriend outside. That was the first head change I ever got. The first time I ever had a good alcohol, but even better. I was always pretty good with guys. I could hang out with guys. I played the guitar. I played soccer. Growing up, I always had a lot of friends. But anytime I get around any of you guys, you know what I mean, you guys, the ladies, I couldn't get within 10 feet without shaking, physically shaking. I could hold it. I'm like, tense myself up so I wouldn't shake. You know, people say, I'm just going to go the other direction. What's the matter with that kid? Tom was kind of weird. But me and my friend Jeremy were down at our school, and they were having tryouts for the talent show. We were just hanging out on the side of the auditorium, and you could see the stairway up there, and you could see the stage sideways. Like, if you were looking at me, I could see beautiful vision. Her name is Teresa Brewer. And I've been watching her for years. She's up there, she's got the microphone, she's trying out for the talent show. And she's got those rag city blues, zip around jeans on. You gotta know about tips to know what the rag city blues and around jeans are. But trust me, they're cool. And she's singing Don't Stop Believing That Dream. My daughter, I have a daughter, she likes that show Glee. That's the first time I've heard it since then. But she was singing that, and I was watching her. And my friend Jeremy had found some Southern Comfort in his parents' garage, and we had stolen some of it. Later, we found, you know, big box of Pop-Off, Cuervo. They had lots of stuff out there. But on this day, it was Southern Comfort. And she was doing her second song with a child, and I took a pull off that Southern Comfort. And that just kind of rolled over me. I don't know how it happened to you guys drink, it just kind of rolled over me. And when she comes walking down the stairs, like I'm sideways, I didn't turn around and run away. I went right for her. Right up to her. I got real close to her. And I thought I'd watch me for a long time. Yeah. And I'm not just that, I was funny. I don't know what I said, but I was funny, I was natural. And 20 minutes later, I got my first kiss. You know, alcohol worked for me from the start. One thing about AA is we share experience things in hope. Occasionally you find people that will tell you things in AA, but the truth of it is really what we do is we share it with each other. All I can do is share with you how I see it. In fact, if our two co-founders, Bill and Bob, are here tonight, if maybe Bob is warm enough for Bill, both of them could only tell you how it appears to them. But one thing I found unique in all the people that I've talked with around here is that first experience. If your first drink was an event, you made an alcohol. My grandmother had no ice except there was no cigarette. In fact, she had this really big talent to be able to have an ash that long and talk and be animated. Never dropped the ash. That was only why she was smoking. But she told me over and over again about 1964. It was New Year's Eve. They had three margaritas. She put the lamp on her head. There was pictures. She was being nasty. And I never saw her take a drink for the rest of her life. That's kind of like a same thing to do, I guess. Kind of like bad results from doing it. Anybody here? Does that work for anybody here? Matthew Reagan, just say no, does that work? I can't say no. Just say yes. So people talk about build a choice, but my build a choice is whatever you got. And you can't even come to them. What happened after that, my life was pretty good for a while, but alcohol was really cool. And that happened to me over and over again. I started becoming like a person who would plan these kind of events. In fact, my favorite is three people hang out with my friend Mark, my friend Jimmy, and what we thought was his dad, which later I turned out that it wasn't. We call him Pops. These were my three favorite people at 13, 14 years old. Pops would buy liquor, so we go down and buy tequila, and we get in Pops' van, and we go over in the warehouse area for Fresno, and we drink. sorry, but we just get to talking, and Jimmy could never say anything. That's why we thought he was in bed, and every time he said something, he was like, shut up, and then he loved us. Pop loved us. I love you, shut up, Jimmy. I love you. I love you guys, man. I love you guys. And the first time we got pop for alcohol, we snuck out with the pops and we were Jimmy and drank too much. And before we started drinking this tequila, my friend Mark, who was a real serious drinker, that's how it is now. And so he was the most serious of all my friends. And in fact, one time, a couple years before that, when Nintendo was real cool, we were playing that Mario, the Mario Brothers, that dun 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 dun. Anyway. And I turned around to my friend Mark. Mark's band still around. He's the lead singer guy this way, where you fall asleep this way. That's why you're supposed to fall asleep this way, because he was thrown up and he was drowning on it. When he's 6 years old. And I kind of saved him. I put him on the side, pulled it out. And he was okay. And 6 months later, he was in the emergency room with me. And I saw him as a fast fucking alcohol. You know what I mean? I wasn't having problems like that. That's an alcohol. You start drinking whiskey, that's pretty exaggerated. And I'll tell you that years later, I got 4 years sober now. I showed up in AA the first time in 1995. Thank you. This guy Mark I'm talking about, and I'll get to that part of my story later. I was so such a bad place that I couldn't sleep, so he would let me come to his job and pace around the back of the break room. And he asked me what the heck I could do for him. I said, I'm under the first stepper. And we did the first stepper together. All those years later, I rescued him and he rescued me. You know what I mean? He's got probably 6 years now. There was me, Mark, Jimmy, and Pop. I love you.
Subject.
You know?
Hey, Dad, what's your son?
So now he's a homeless guy. Pops. You know what I mean? Yeah, he had the alcohol. Look, we all look the same eventually. The nose. You know what I mean? The skin. How Pop looked. Half, right? Half kind of crazy. But before we got started, Jimmy, or Pop, to give him this advice. If you get caught, I'm a grandmother, you get caught, you only drink a beer. You know, and I get almost upset before I was that night. I don't remember what part I stopped remembering, but I was stopped remembering. In fact, people talk about the invisible line where people cross over from hard drinking or casual drinking into the alcoholic phase when we lose our power of choice. That's a big tough one right there. Obviously, just as we're on today, we really take a look at the first step because it really feels like so obvious. You know, you walk in and people are like, you didn't take the first step. I took the first step from one. I brought my kid, the wife's gone. I triggered my 87 Sentra for some Zygos. I walked out of a fire in the crack house and then still dropping my Southern Comfort. People were looking for me. I was like $20,000 down hours. You know what I mean? Seriously, take a look at that. But I came home and we snuck in the back door and I remember that as soon as I somebody got caught. And my grandmother was in Lazy Boy Creek. As soon as I heard that creek, I knew we were busted. I don't remember myself. But she said, Jerry, are you sick? And I said, what are you?
Never that much, right?
This guy down was a priest. He goes into prisons and ministers to people. Just a real solid, quiet man. He was out front and he goes, he's drunk! He's drunk! I remember that. I remember, he's drunk! That's what I remember. My grandmother was like shocked. Yeah. Fast forward a couple of years, I mean, I got to fast forward, but I haven't got much time, but fast forward a couple of years, ATMs became something new. You know, like the smartphones are new, but ATMs were new. And my grandmother was like, I don't know how to use computers. Can't use them with a pen. Before this is done, don't want to mess up. She would call Bank of America and I would do the pen for her. I would put checks in for her, get cash for her. Big mistake. I don't know about you guys. Big mistake. You know, I'm missing out for her ATM and getting that ready money. In fact, I gotta say that it's difficult, and my girlfriend here is Jenny right here. I will tell you guys, I don't know how this is related, but I suspect it's same way. My mom and dad left when I was very little, I don't remember. My grandfather left soon after. My grandmother took her first child out of the cotton fields at IRS, you know, working swing shift. She didn't know how to do paperwork, but she found a job. And we lived in a bad part of town. And I gotta tell you that abandoned people, raising abandoned people, make it difficult to connect with people in the right way. I'm learning how to do that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Really, I think the heart of it is don't get all crazy and start saying I'm sappy. And Dr. Bob said this. He said the heading was love and service. You know what I mean? The group I go to, we look up definitions and make sure the I's are dotted in the big book. Dr. Bob said love and service. And I got to tell you this too. My group of friends started to shrink because people don't think like me. I don't like hanging out with you if we're going to miss school and you're going to get scared and call your mom. We all agree. I'm not going to argue anymore. You know, if you get stupid, when we go over to the liquor bar and slice some pint and you try to walk out with something, you get popped, you're not going to be no more. You're not fucking this up. My circle started to shrink. And I got to tell you, it's maybe true for you, I say, ask yourself your own questions. But I ended up with people who drank like me. I ended up eventually selling purses. It was really big on supply. If you have to get your alcohol bad, you're good, you start about supply, right? How much do we got? And how long are we going to take to get it? You can always, just like you see us standing around out there, you can see us at the pay phone when it needs to be paid phone. There's that look, that pretty wave. Can you come up and call? Can you hate me? Back at the ATM, I had swiped this lady's purse, and they sent me to our stepchild, Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to get weird now. They sent me to Narcotics Anonymous at this church. And I thought it was weird then. In fact, you know, they had a stress on them. You might as well have had Yoda up there talking about using the force. To me. And my grandmother asked me when I came out, what'd you think of it? And I said, oh, it was cool. I really respected those other group themselves. You know what I mean? And it was later where I got married to a really my father owned a liquor store, so we got married. This is my decision making process. I'm pregnant, marry me. And Jenny asked me, you know, she's like, you love me? I'm like, you know. You get pregnant, get married. This is the thing that I learned. Democrats put the word, Republicans put the rich, you get pregnant, get married. This is our group. This is not my number of conversations with your lady. I ended up, when I would drink, when I would take a drink, I would just stare for a week on this. This is my early 20s by this time. My alcoholism had progressed. To where even when I didn't want to drink, I had a 6 month old baby and I started this company. I used to play paintball where you ship people, you know, with a thing like we weren't anything else. And I did some custom equipment with different engraving, we fixed the triggers, and we were really good at it. And I had a lot of customers, and at 21, maybe 22 years old, me and my partner rated 15 grand a month. And I was successful, and I wanted to stay sober, and I wanted to have a family. At this point, when I was starting to drink, I would be gone for a week at a time. At this point, I'm taking vitamins when I start to party because I know I'm not going to eat, and if you didn't do that, you should take vitamins. Now, I would get to where I don't eat for 2 or 3 days, and then trying over and over to get sober. I faced a robbery of an ice cream truck one time. I would do things like put ice ketchup onto a label or, oh, we decided to fucking give me a 7-Eleven. Not blood. It started to get worse. I got sent to my mother's and caused a lot of problems at my mother's house. He came back and my wife, I called her after being gone for a week and I tried to trade our car for some more supply. And I've been drinking for a part of 2 or 3 days straight. I'm a big crier. I don't know if you guys are criers. Anybody cry here? Nobody's crying? I'm a big crier, man. I need it too. Like, oh, I'm so sorry. I would be in a hotel room deciding no one has a call. No one has a call. I can't lie. And I would take my head on the wall and I go, stupid. Like this. Stupid. I was just going to fuck this new man. I'm not kidding, man. One more chance. I did not want to be to leave my kid without a father, because I wasn't going to be my dad. And she said, well, I'll tell you what, you have this stupid big of me, and you can come over. That was so precious that you can come over. And you can see Cameron when you're here. I went over, I was so happy. And I remember I was up over in Cedar, visiting Fernando. I was up over in Cedar, and going back to my grandmother's house, and I had this video game, and I was going to the trainer because we owed this lady was on it, and I ended up selling it. I'm gone for 2 weeks. One video game, very resourceful people. Very resourceful people on there. So I ended up walking into a biomedical center in Fresno after a week, crying, hopeless, helpless, and I ended up myself in the treatment program. Many people here in the treatment program, I don't be shy at all of us are. Yeah, welcome to the program, man. I'm an alumni from quite a few different places. And I got kicked out of there, for taking vitamins and toothache. And they put you in that circle and they give you a little sheet with a little happy faces, sad faces, friendless faces, meaty faces. I mean, you feel that. I'm like, all right, that's what I'm here to do. You just lost your construction business from crank and you're going to tell me about how to be emotionally sound? You know what I mean? This is my, you know. A week before that, I had fine crying in an office, fine that all of them would show up and stay clean and sober. And they kicked me out of there. And I remember I got fired. I said, first of all, I paid you $5,000 to be in here. Just kind of there, thank God for that. Just watching your mid office and they got fucking hated in that day. They had to send me off. And he pulled out the contract. He said, do you remember it? This day, and he said, I almost took the day to you and get to soak, and I was like, yeah. In fact, I used the words like I would cut off my arms and legs when he's sober. This is the kind of terms I'm using. And I find it. He said, this is step one for you. I don't believe that you didn't mean that. Did you lie? I said, no, I didn't lie. But, you know, just keep thinking about this word, but, everything before it is canceled. I always had a butt. I'm a yeah, bug guy. I'm a yeah, bug guy, should have would have been. Then the yeah, bug, should have would have been the name. Never. Speaking of that, I became an AA, and my life started to change. I loved AA from the beginning. If we're weird people in AA, it's a weird kind of thing. If you feel like we're weird. All the hugging, weird people. You know, like, I'd have people say things like, I come to my family's late for meetings, the family's old cop, she died, I built in, made up, I continue to save my life later, too. He leans over and he says, he just sits by. And he just went home. Screw that guy. I don't like old people. I don't like neighbor people either. I don't like the news from the big book. And he's like, I leaned over to him, I said, well, what was it? He said, well, you're supposed to be here. And I'm like, holy crap. But then he comes and he's walking this old guy, ladies and gentlemen, he's the half, and I chased after him. And I said, what was I supposed to hear? He goes, how the fuck am I supposed to know you were supposed to hear? You know what I mean? I was real frustrated with AA. I mean, I couldn't be in the same room with my father-in-law, mother-in-law, and my wife. All day long, in the meetings even, and I would go 3 meetings a day smoking that coffee. That's a great combo. They make the styrofoam cap bar, you know, when you put the straws through it, make a satellite. This is my age, you know. Living with my in-laws, I hated me. My leg on the table, my back. Very sweet, man. Praise God, I didn't believe God. We were 7-11, 7-11. Conscious what? Conscious fit? And I was. But I got sober, I got a sponsor, you know, and that guy Bill telling me that, and I want to get that across to you, God and spirituality is not what I thought. In fact, looking back, that statement hit me hard when he said, and I started just listening to me, like, is it possible that there could be a message just for me? Is it even possible to consider that? And I started hear things, you know what I mean? And we're the kind of people that like sci-fi anyway. I like sci-fi matrix and stuff anyway. No, I'm more curious as a swamper. That's what I want. Woo-hoo. Can I roll that? How many roll wise over? I like that kind of stuff. I've found that I've always been, that feeling that something was going to be great, I've always had this. You ever be in a really bad place and realize that you're watching yourself fail? Is that really weird? Did anybody ever have that happen? Like feeling really sad and kind of like observing yourself feel sad, and it was just even better. And I was an agnostic atheist. In fact, like I said, I thought your stuff was stupid. I had real problems with my kids and my family. I could not feel sober. I was thinking about drinking. God is not going to help. Your program is not going to help. I didn't know that. But me looking at it and reading it and assuming that that's no way that could be the answer, I never considered that maybe would a person that had such a hard time solving a problem, wouldn't the problem seem really odd? For the answer, wouldn't the answer seem contrary? Do you think that's ever occurred to me? I mean, like, is it possible? But there's a power greater than myself. And I was just doing Derek Ferguson. Started sharing with me different spiritual things. He was doing this meeting somewhere. And he had a whole group who's like, take a look at your hands. So we all take a look at our hands. He's like, when you say your hand, let me say my hand, like it belongs to you, like that, and you have to cut your hand off. Would we lose you, or would we lose part of you? And if it was, you know, we'd lose part of me, promise to still be here. He's like, Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump. Salvation helped out. Clearly, Dan, who else is part of him. He goes, every time I see you, I say, how are you doing? I go, and he say, you say, and it did. My mind is driving me crazy. My mind is driving me crazy. And he goes, are you your mind, or does your mind belong to you? And I go, well, it belongs to me. He goes, who's with me being driven crazy by your mind? Who's that? Who's watching? Or is there something else? I thought he was crazy. He may have been. But my point is that I started considering, he's still sober, started considering possibilities. You know what I mean? And the internal condition was so bad, while I was going to the meeting today, in my heart, this case of mine, you may have a really active mind, it was mine. You just. You're not doing that. You're poor. She doesn't love you. You're a bad father. They're right. You're dumb. Or maybe run the other way. You're hot. You're going to be rich. I mean, you give me a pint of Southern Comfort, you want to go to business together.
And I got ideas.
So this is going on in AA, and I have a sponsor. And I went to steps. So summer 1995, I had a really powerful spiritual thing happen at my in-law's home. I ran down to the fellowship where I was going. I'm not going to tell you guys this story, but I tell you what, there was something there in that mother of the neurons, and I knew it. You're never going to hear me say otherwise. When my mom was coming up, my mom was there. I know that God was there. That's why I ran down there. That's why I seemed all busy. I didn't care. I told him that I was cool. I didn't have any good work. So and I started going through the program. I was sober about 12 years. I had done every state in my group. You know, chairperson, assistant chair, GSR, HMI, Y, sponsoring a bunch of people. I thought for one dude, he's a friend of mine who brought me back into AA, welcomed me back in, who shot something with, who we were moving stuff together. That's that sponsor. Anyway, about 10, 11, 12 years, I can only share you my experience. This is something really valuable for someone who's been here for a while. That it's kind of weird that they start talking about alcohol is not the problem. Is that the symptom of the problem? You know what I mean? Kind of like that step two thing, the insanity thing. Like, have you ever taken the first drink drunk? Mm-hmm. I'm always sober when I start drinking, and that sobriety, this has to change or I won't stay here. We treat the birds, and I tell them something that the wings are. Why? And then we take that away. I gotta find something else. It's funny, I've been told this over my wife, she wasn't good looking enough anymore. We keep going to A with bullshit. They didn't know how to work the program. They want to do the service. We were just talking about them like this on the way at home. I'm doing everything, you know. Everybody's amazed. They didn't accept me at work. The house on the other side of Bergen, which is the nice side of Fresno, was way far away from that trailer park. Still wanted to know. Had another little baby, little minivan, all the toys, tried to get fence. You know. And I started sharing with people in my group. And I was having problems at work. We were going to get coffee at the coffee machine, there was a smoking room, and through the glass, there was this girl, she's looking at me. And I'm praying about it, I'm responsible about it. Say, she's going to let me share. Next time, I don't know. Yeah, doing pretty good. Still having problems looking through the window. This time I kind of went in and had a smoke. So I'm praying about it. Doing my intro, looking responsible, and let me share. Next night. When I woke up at Motel 7 with this woman, there was no good people to be sure. I didn't have a sponsor. What about scuba diving? That wasn't the first time. It started to happen more and more and more. And I was really big in AA. You know what I mean? Like, a little popular in AA. Like, I was Thomas the Big Book Boy. I did the weird things I'd ever even seen on doing. Like, I did recite, and my friend was amazing. I did it. The doctor's opinion was the front part of my book. I had read this book so much, and I loved it so much. It saved my life. I could tell you the doctor's opinion. And almost all of chapter 5. You know what I mean? So it's not like a mental thing. I couldn't do it. There's that part that the lady read from up here. There's a stuff that gave to his family and death. I had the IMAX 3D hands around the bars that gave to his family and death. I was in Las Vegas, I've been in a meeting a couple of years, I've been in 5 different relationships, I'm divorced now. I'm saying I'm almost getting ready to turn on the biggest professional football team. I've always wanted to do this since I was little. I'm on the bench, all my guy gets hurt, I'm in the game, it's the best day of my life. Somebody asked me how to come, and I said, yeah, I'm okay. And I'm 13 years sober. Now what's crazy is when I'm a flat house owner, but being 13 years sober and thinking you can drink again. That's the insanity we're talking about. Sober insanity. Talking myself into it. It was okay every now and then. 2 years later, the disease had progressed. When I had my kids 2 or 3 times a week, my daughter was in the 4th grade. My grandmother passed on. She left me a bunch of money. And I say there's only one thing worse for one of us than that portion, that's good portion. Because I was drinking, and that money was like throwing gasoline on fire. It was a raging fire. I wasn't hanging out in my life, but right now, I'm in a 4-foot by 4-foot bathroom in my condominium with the door closed and the towel underneath my cellular pump and my weed. I had a pound of weed in my house in 2 years. So it was pretty okay to just have one drink. And it was so cool. Until I walked onto my daughter's elementary school campus. I walked into her classroom, and I told her that she didn't belong to me anymore. And I don't remember that. And Chris Ford said that I was disheveled, I was dirty, and I had mental problems, he said. And I smelled. I don't remember that. 3 days later, Coach's PD was sitting near Fresno. Coach's PD was out in front of my house with American Airlines. I was naked and they could not subdue me, and everyone just bathed me and tased me. I only got a pimple of a drinking problem. I had a big old terminal illness. They hit me when I was sober. Now I'm sleeping all sober here tonight. This is alcoholism right here. You probably got to say about it. I ended up doing a upset with all that memorization I told you, with everything I knew about AA, it never occurred to me when that period came. In fact, I like when people talk about what it's going to look like if they need a coach to do that. What part of power is going to be coached to this man? That's all kinds of power you got. You can see it coming. So your coach is too. Everyone I know is prison. I could go along from right here and find a place to drink. I didn't know this thing. I landed down in Alcoholics Anonymous 4 years ago. Lost my kids at that time. My ex-wife, who probably many people would say should have took me to the cleaners. She has to recover from Al-Anon, which is another group that if you have a broken boyfriend or husband, wife, you may want to suggest you go there. Let's say, well, 20 years later, if I would have lost my kids, I was calling people in the program saying, if I got to feel like this, I'm checking out. So, but she didn't do that. So, the time's running out. What's it like now? I came back to the program. I landed in the program. In fact, I swear it was like a year, and I just kind of like woke up in the day and like, wow, they had me on, I'm not going to go into that part, but they had me on so many medications trying to get control of my insanity. And other long words they attached to what my condition was, that I could bear this thing to me. And the first prayer I think that I ever prayed that I really, really wanted it the most was I was asking God in 2009, please help me sit through the meeting. Because I couldn't sit 5 minutes, but I'll get it up and I'm just sort of getting up and going about it. I'm sweating. So if you're new and you're having that going on, you don't have to hold it. Are you going to get up and go out this week? That's what I'm saying. If you can make it to the meeting, you can get sober. What's it like now? A person I sponsored back in the 90s gave me a shot when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. A friend of me and mine's, I didn't have any clothes or stuff for a sales job. I lost this job I had for 15 years in that store somewhere. He gave me clothes. This lady at the job that I got, she gave me her husband's old suits. A guy that I took to Los Angeles for biblical study in the early 90s is now taking me through the steps again. This guy that changing him is so dramatic that you wouldn't believe it. This guy was doing a Billy Jean in the hotel room at 3 a.m. I told him, I want to get violent with you, man. Look at this guy, look at that. And you can ask him, he's one of the most calmest, loving people I've ever met. We take them through steps here. We help each other. We serve each other here. My son just started prison with faith. We sit in the cold when I first walked in the AA. My daughter made me a duct tape wallet from middle school. I had a good relationship with my ex-wife. I have a beautiful girlfriend like mine. So I guess you could say that Alcoholics Anonymous and everybody says it's almost like a t-shirt. It will save my life. I think Alcoholics Anonymous saved me in every way a person can be saved. And I can never repay that debt. Probably a little bit out of gas. Anybody got anything to say? Thank you for having me, sir.